Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. Jerry, good friend of the show, has written in regarding a question I asked a few episodes ago, back in chapter 8 of this book. Jerry says, in 13-8, you were wondering about the tense changes in other translations. So this was that chapter that started in the present tense, started in the wrong narrative perspective, and then about halfway through the first paragraph just switched back into past tense. Jerry says, I have the PNV on my Kindle, and I picked up the Anthony Briggs translation from the library, and they were the same. So that's really interesting. Why does it do that? Why is there a half a paragraph in the wrong narrative perspective, and why has that been kept in all the different translations into English? I do not know. Thanks, Jerry, though, for writing in to tell me that. Biscuit Potter also left a comment regarding the previous chapter, saying, Pierre remembers this month for the rest of his life. Confirmed, Pierre doesn't die, and he even gets to grow as a person. With Andre and Helena both dead, I'm going to go ahead and start hoping he marries Natasha again. Yeah, I never stopped hoping he'd marry Natasha, to be honest. That's what I'm rooting for. That's who I'm shipping together, those two. Alright, today's chapter is Book 13, Chapter 13. The French evacuation began on the night between the 6th and the 7th of October. Kitchens and sheds were dismantled. Carts loaded and troops and baggage trains started. At 7 in the morning, a French convoy in marching trim, wearing charcos and carrying muskets, knapsacks and enormous sacks, stood in front of the sheds, and animated French talk mingled with curses sounded all along the line. In the shed, everyone was ready, dressed, belted, shod, and only awaited the order to start. The sick soldier, Sokolov, pale and thin with dark shadows round his eyes, alone sat in his place, barefoot and not dressed. His eyes, prominent from the emaciation of his face, gazed inquiringly at his comrades who were paying no attention to him, and he moaned regularly and quietly. It was evidently not so much his sufferings that caused him to moan. He had dysentery, as his fear and grief at being left alone. Pierre, girt with a rope round his waist, and wearing shoes Karatev had made for him from some leather a French soldier had torn off a tea chest and brought to have his boots mended with, went up to the sick man and squatted down beside him. You know, Sokolov, they are not going away. They have a hospital here. You may be better off than we others, said Pierre. Oh, Lord. Oh, it will be the death of me. Oh, Lord, moaned the man, in a louder voice. I'll go and ask them again directly, said Pierre, rising and going to the door of the shed. Just as Pierre reached the door, the corporal, who had offered him a pipe the day before, came up to it with two soldiers. The corporal and soldiers were in marching kit, with knapsacks and charcos that had metal straps, and these changed their familiar faces. The corporal came, according to others, to shut the door. The prisoners had to be counted before being let out. Corporal, what will they do with the sick man? Pierre began. But even as he spoke, he began to doubt whether this was the corporal he knew or a stranger, so unlike himself did the corporal seem at that moment. Moreover, just as Pierre was speaking, a sharp rattle of drums was suddenly heard from both sides. The corporal frowned at Pierre's words, and uttering some meaningless oaths, slammed the door. The shed became semi-dark, and the sharp rattle of the drums on two sides drowned the sick man's groans. There it is. It again, said Pierre to himself. And an involuntary shudder ran down his spine. In the corporal's changed face, in the sound of his voice, in the stirring and deafening noise of the drums, he recognized that mysterious, callous, force which compelled people against their will to kill their fellow men. That force, the effect of which he had witnessed during the executions. To fear or to try to escape that force to address entreaties or exhortations to those who served as its tools was useless. Pierre knew this now. One had to wait and endure. He did not again go to the sick man nor turn to look at him, but stood frowning by the door of the hut. When that door was opened and the prisoners, crowding against one another like a flock of sheep, squeezed into the exit, Pierre pushed his way forward and approached that very captain, who, as the corporal had assured him, was ready to do anything for him. The captain was also in marching dress, and on his cold face appeared that same it which Pierre had recognized in the corporal's words and the roll of the drums. "Pass on, pass on," the captain reiterated, frowning sternly and looking at the prisoners who thronged past him. Pierre went up to him, though he knew his attempt would be vain. "What now?" the officer asked, with a cold look as if not recognizing Pierre. Pierre told him about the sick man. "He'll manage to walk, devil take him," said the captain. "Pass on, pass on," he continued, without looking at Pierre. "But he's dying," Pierre again began. "Be so good," shouted the captain, frowning angrily. Drum-da-da-dum-dum-dum, rattled the drums, and Pierre understood that this mysterious force completely controlled these men and that it was now useless to say anything more. The officer prisoners were separated from the soldiers and told to march in front. There were about 30 officers, with Pierre among them, and about 300 men. The officers, who had come from the others' sheds, were all strangers to Pierre and much better dressed than he. They looked at him and at his shoes mistrustfully, as at an alien. Not far from him walked a fat major with a sallow, bloated, angry face, who was wearing a Kazan dressing gown, tied round with a towel, and who evidently enjoyed the respect of his fellow prisoners. He kept one hand in which he clasped a tobacco pouch inside the bosom of his dressing gown, and held the stem of his pipe firmly with the other. Panting and puffing, the major grumbled and growled at everybody because he thought he was being pushed, and that they were all hurrying when they had nowhere to hurry to, and were all surprised at something when there was nothing to be surprised at. Another, a thin little officer, was speaking to everyone, conjecturing where they were now being taken and how far they would get that day. An official in felt boots and wearing a commissariat uniform ran round the side to side and gazed at the ruins of Moscow, loudly announcing his observations as to what had been burnt down, and what this or that part of the city was that they could see. A third officer, who by his accent was a Pole, disputed with the commissariat officer, arguing that he was mistaken in his identification of the different wards of Moscow. "What are you disputing about?" said the major angrily. "What does it matter whether it is St. Nicholas or St. Blasius? You see it's burnt down, and there's an end of it." "What are you pushing for? Isn't the road wide enough?" said he, turning to a man behind him who was not pushing him at all. Oh, what have they done? The prisoners are one side and another," were heard saying as they gazed on their charred ruins. "All beyond the river, and Zebova, and in the Kremlin. Just look, there's not half of it left. Yes, I told you the whole quarter beyond the river, and so it is. Well, you know it's burnt, so what's the use of talking?" said the major. As they passed near a church in the Kamovnivki, one of the few unburnt quarters of Moscow, the whole mass of prisoners suddenly started to one side, and exclamations of horror and disgust were heard. "Ah, the villains! What heathens! Yes, dead, dead, so he is, and smeared with something." Pierre, too, drew near the church where the thing was that evoked these exclamations, and dimly made out something leaning against the palings surrounding the church. From the words of his comrades, who saw better than he did, he found that this was the body of a man set upright against the palings with its face smeared with soot. Go on, what the devil, go on. 30,000 devils, the convoy guards began cursing, and the French soldiers, with fresh virulence, drove away their swords. The crowd of prisoners who were gazing at the dead man. All right, there we go, another chapter down. I kind of messed up that last line, so I'll give it to you again as it was in the PNV translation. And with renewed animosity, the French soldiers used their swords to disperse the crowd of prisoners looking at the dead man. Same but different. So I'll keep this one quite short, but, well, today we got a little glimpse of just how bad Russia is, or sorry, I should say how bad Moscow is at this point, and how bad things are looking for Pierre. Not good at all. He has more hardships to endure, I'm sure, but he's really being taken down to his sort of lowest point at the moment, and it's kind of, well, I'm not going to say it's a good thing, but it's a test for him. He'll know if he survives this, that he is sort of a true man, I guess, a worthy person. I'm not quite sure how to phrase it, but that seems to be what he's after, isn't it? Some kind of validation that he's worthwhile. The thing that he did in this chapter that was showing his Pierre-ness, I think, was trying to help that sick person. They've been ordered to march, and he's standing up for this one man who looks like he's dying. And even in the face of this, what did he describe it as, this officers who look like they are possessed with the will to kill other men, he still stands up for this dying man. Well, he is then reminded that he is just flesh and bones, that he's just a mortal man, you know, when he goes to Moscow and sees this dead body slumped against the church with the soot on his face, just to remind him that, you know, this could be you, sort of thing. Well, that's going to do us for today. I will thank everybody who is supporting the podcast on Patreon, and just remind you all that if you'd like to support me in the creation of podcasts about great literature, go to patreon.com/A Year of War and Peace podcast. All right, thank you for listening today. I'll see you tomorrow.